This is my video update on this Tuesday, midday, May the 19th, coming to you from Belgrade, Serbia. Let's talk about some news. Let's get a better view from right over here. And before we get started on today's news topics, let me just say a quick thank you to everyone that likes this video. Thank you so much for hitting that like button, and thank you so much for subscribing to this channel. And also to those who decide to give me some of your hype points, if you are watching this video on your mobile device on YouTube, you get 3 hypes a week, and those points get allocated to this video and to this channel, and you make it on some sort of a leaderboard. I'm not quite sure exactly how it works, but hypes help, and I really appreciate it when you allocate one of your hypes to this video. So thank you so much for hyping this video. Thank you for liking. Thank you for subscribing. And muchas gracias for the hype. I like it a lot. Let's talk about the news, and let's start things off with some breaking news. An article from the Financial Times, which claims that Xi told Trump that Putin might regret invasion of Ukraine, according to the Financial Times. A source familiar with the matter said that Trump and Xi Jinping were talking about all kinds of things last week. And Xi Jinping just kind of threw it out there in the middle of their discussion of various topics. Xi said, you know, Putin might regret the invasion of Ukraine. He just kind of threw it out there in the middle of the conversation. Trump said nothing. And then they continued talking about all the stuff that they were talking about last week during their summit in Beijing. No comment from the White House. From this Financial Times article, no comment from China or the Kremlin. They're not addressing this claim from the Financial Times, which I don't believe to be true. Xi Jinping, a very experienced leader, very experienced diplomat, very careful with what he says, the words that he chooses to say, very careful in what he says. I seriously doubt that he would be speaking with Trump and would just kind of blurt out something like Putin might regret or will regret the invasion of Ukraine. I doubt that he would say that to Trump, and I doubt that Trump would not have any comment about that. Are you telling me that Trump, if Xi told this to Trump, the Trump White House wouldn't go on to Truth Social and post something about it? Come on now, come on. So I'm thinking Financial Times, I'm thinking UK, I'm thinking MI6, I'm thinking let's put something out there a couple of hours before Putin is about to meet Xi to try and sabotage a little bit of sabotage before the big meeting between Putin and Xi Jinping. That's the purpose of this article. People familiar with the matter, sources familiar with the conversations in Beijing. It's a very, very thinly sourced article from the Financial Times. Very thin. So that's breaking news item number one. And breaking news item number two is coming from the Russian Foreign Intel Agency, the SVR. And I have said many times in many videos that the SVR, the Foreign Intelligence Service of Russia, is hit or miss. They are 50-50 when it comes to the reports that they put out there. So always keep that in mind when we talk about the Russian Foreign Intel Service. But they are claiming that Ukraine is preparing strikes on Russia from the Baltic countries, specifically from Latvia. The plan is to also launch the UAVs from the territory of these countries against Russia in order to significantly reduce the time it takes to reach the targets and increase the effectiveness of the terrorist attacks, according to a statement from the SVR. Russian drone operators have already been deployed to Latvia at the various locations and military bases that you see on your screen right now. That is what the Foreign Intel Service is claiming. So basically, they are saying that in their report, they're saying that it's no longer about the Baltic countries allowing Ukraine drones to pass over their airspace and then make their way to St. Petersburg, to the Leningrad region, to Moscow. Now they are considering actually launching those drones from Latvia territory or from Baltic territory. And Latvia is apparently okay with this. And now they've got the drone operators even in country. This is what the Russian foreign intel is claiming, which would be a huge escalation if this turns out to be true. So that's the breaking news, the two breaking news stories for today. We have Putin in China. Has Putin arrived to China? I haven't seen any videos or any images of Putin arriving in China. I haven't seen any images or videos of Putin's arrival at the airport. Maybe by the time this video goes up, some video footage will be released of Putin arriving in Beijing. It will be interesting to see who greets the Russian president at the airport. Most likely it will not be Xi Jinping. I imagine that Putin will meet with Xi Jinping, or Xi Jinping will greet Putin when they arrive at the destination of where they're going to hold bilateral meetings. I doubt that Xi will be at the airport, but it will be interesting to see the type of reception that Putin gets at the airport. I haven't seen anything published so far, but Putin did post a video message to China before his trip. Usually what the Russian president does before he travels to China is that he publishes an article on Chinese media. He writes an article and it's published on Chinese media. This time around, he decided to, kind of a strange bug is that, he decided to post a video and another one. What are these guys? Interesting. Yeah, so it was a video message to the people of China instead of an actual article. And in his video address, Putin talks about the excellent relationship between Russia and China, the bilateral relationship that has grown over the years between Russia and China. We're going to see about 40 documents signed during this trip, and they're going to cover everything from energy to military cooperation, to everything, to travel, visa-free travel, which we have right now between Russia and China. All kinds of documents are going to be signed between Russia and China. Actually, this trip is taking place on the 25th anniversary of the Russia-China Treaty of Good Neighborliness, Friendship, and Cooperation. So that's the timing of this trip, the 25th anniversary of the Treaty of Russia-China Neighborliness and Friendship. The close strategic relationship between Russia and China plays a major stabilizing role globally, Putin said in his video address. Without allying against anyone, we seek peace and universal prosperity. That's an interesting statement. We're not allies against anybody. Obviously addressed to the United States. What we seek is peace and universal prosperity. A multipolar world. Basically a message to the United States to get on board with a multipolar world and stop trying to hold on to the unipolar moment. Stop fighting to hold on to the unipolar moment. That's the message from Putin. So we're going to have a busy couple of days in Beijing. A lot of news that will be coming out of Beijing from this meeting between the Russian president and Xi Jinping. So let's go to the United States. Let's turn our attention to the big election. We got a big election in Kentucky. That's right. It feels like this election in Kentucky with Thomas Massie is going to decide the fate of the United States of America. It really feels like it, huh? So today is the big vote. If Massie wins, then he will go on to face a Democrat rival in November. If he loses, then it will be seen as a very big victory for Trump and AIPAC and everyone that has aligned against Massie, the big forces, the big powerful forces that are aligned against Massie. They will come out with a big victory if he loses. His opponent is Ed Gallrain or Gallstone or something. I don't even know. Whatever his name. No one even cares about his opponent. His opponent is hiding in some basement. It really reminds me of Biden in 2020, doesn't it? Interesting how you have an opponent who is very much like Biden in 2020, hanging out in his basement, hiding out in his basement, refuses to debate Massie, refuses to go up against Massie, to challenge Massie in a debate, just hiding out. And it's a tight race. It's a very close race. Exactly the playbook that Biden used in 2020 and that Trump still complains about today. Now you have Trump funding and financing a Biden type of opponent to Massie. So we will see what happens today. I'm not sure when do the results come out. Is it going to take a while, or are we going to get the results immediately out of Kentucky? Let me know, anyone watching from the United States, from Kentucky, that can tell everyone in the community when we will find out the results of this very big election. Trump actually sent Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of War, I believe he sent them to Kentucky to actually campaign against Massie. Hegseth said that Kentucky has a choice in this race. You can send a warrior to reinforce the president in our shared fight against the radical left, or you can send an obstructionist. In my mind, it's an easy choice. The warrior who refuses to debate Massie. That's some warrior, right? That is an odd place for an outdoor ping pong table. Isn't that a strange place for a ping pong table? How cool would that be to be hanging out in Belgrade and you say, you know what, let's play ping pong. let's go play ping pong. What a great location to have a ping pong game. Very cool. So we turn to the European Union and the search for a negotiator with Russia. They are searching for someone to negotiate with Russia. The search for a negotiator, the search for Spock. Yeah, there are some people in the EU amongst the globalist cool kids who believe that now is the time to find one person who will represent the EU in possible talks with Putin. Putin already said that the one person that he would be okay with is Schroeder. And of course, that is not going to happen. Putin said that because he understands that Europe is not going to enter into negotiations, at least not in good faith. And most likely, they will not be able to find someone to suitably represent them in some sort of talks with Russia. Putin understanding that what the EU wants is surrender and capitulation from Russia, which they will never, ever get. Never going to happen. And they would just prefer to keep the war going. But there are forces in Europe who are now saying, you know what, maybe it is time now that Trump is occupied with Iran and all of that stuff, maybe we can begin to sort of possibly open up some dialogue with Russia. They're looking at Merkel. Some of these people are eyeing Angela Merkel. Another candidate is Alexander Stubity Stube. Like that would ever happen. Stube sitting across the table with Putin or with Lavrov. Come on, give me a break. Give me a break. Or Draghi, of course Draghi. When in doubt, the EU turns to Mario Draghi. The sixth man of the team of the EU. He can play every position on the field. Send him in, Mario Draghi. He can be a negotiator. Unsuitable to be a negotiator. Goldman Sachs, Super Mario Draghi. Completely unsuitable to be a negotiator. He was unsuitable as the head of the ECB, wasn't he? He used to have Lagarde's position, Super Mario Draghi. A globalist to his fingertips, but no match for Putin or Lavrov. Absolutely no match. Nor is Stubity Stube a lightweight. But Merkel would be an interesting choice. Merkel said, when she was asked about this in an interview, if she would be up for negotiating with Russia, if she would be the pick to represent Europe. She said, you know what? We should have someone who has political power to represent Europe, not me. What am I? What is my position? At the end of the day, who am I? I used to be the Chancellor of Germany that wrecked Germany and that wrecked the European Union. That's what I used to be, and wrecked the Minsk Agreement as well. That's what I used to be. But now, why would I go to Russia and negotiate with Putin? Under what authority? And she suggested that the person that should be representing the EU should be someone with an actual political mandate, a political position. That's what Merkel said. But you know what? Merkel is so arrogant, so vain, that I bet you if they did appoint her as the negotiator, she would accept it. Absolutely, she would accept it. And even though she was the main person who was in on the European side, who was the lead negotiator in the Minsk agreements, 2015, along with the first Minsk agreements were with Hollande, actually, and she was one of the countries in Europe representing Europe in the Minsk agreements, and she was also someone who sabotaged the Minsk agreements. You know, Putin believed that Europe would enforce the Minsk agreements and abide by the Minsk agreements and get Ukraine to honor the Minsk agreements. And Angela Merkel, in many interviews, she revealed that the Minsk agreements were nothing more than a way to buy time so that Ukraine could rearm, so the army could rearm after the conflict in 2015, for which they lost. And they could prepare for an eventual future conflict with Russia. That's what Merkel said in an interview. Hollande said the same thing, actually. I believe Hollande said it a couple of times, but one of the times that he said it was during a Vovan and Lexus prank call, where he also admitted that the Minsk agreements for the Europeans, for France and Germany, were nothing more than a farce, just a way to buy time. They were never going to honor the Minsk agreements, and it was always about buying some time so that Ukraine could be in a position to be used as a battering ram against Russia sometime in the future. So Merkel is obviously not to be trusted, and Putin doesn't trust Merkel. He's very upset with Merkel because of what Merkel did, right? Putin trusted Merkel. He believed that Merkel would honor her agreement, honor the Minsk agreement, honor her word. but she turned out to be a snake. And so my point in all of this, as I ramble on and on and on, my point is that I think Russia, I think Putin would very much like to have Merkel going to Moscow and negotiating on behalf of the EU. I think he would very much welcome it. And I think he would welcome it because Putin would be able to look Merkel once again in the eyes and really drive a very difficult deal, difficult terms presented to Merkel. And he would let Merkel know what she did. And she would have to go back to Europe and deliver very harsh terms, understanding that Europe has lost, that the collective West has lost. That would be Merkel's legacy, bringing back capitulation terms to Europe. Can you imagine that? That's what Merkel becomes known for, delivering the capitulation terms to the collective West. So I think Russia would actually welcome Merkel as the negotiator to just stick it to her for everything that she did with the Minsk agreements, for double-crossing Russia with the Minsk agreements. So we'll see who they choose. If they choose anybody, I would say it's going to be Merkel. I would say that I can't think of anyone else who would be a negotiator. You know what? Why not Ursula and Kaya Kallas when you think about it? Why do you have to get someone else? I mean, it's Ursula's job, isn't it? She's the EC president. Who better to represent the European Union than the president, right? The president of the European Union with the president of Russia. Why not Ursula? And if you're going to send Ursula, you have to send Stunning and Brave, of course, because Stunning and Brave is the top diplomat, the foreign minister. It just makes sense. So that's who you should really send. But that would be a train wreck. That would be a complete train wreck. Tatters, President Putin, I thought your economy was in tatters. No, not in tatters. But I thought it was in tatters. Where are those washing machines? Where are those washing machines in the Kremlin? Let me find those washing machine chips. Gotta find those washing machine chips. Yeah, so I mean, if you're going to send anybody, the proper people to send, according to, let's say, protocol, would be the president to represent the EU and the top diplomat. But you notice how they don't want to go because they're afraid to go. That's why they're afraid to go. Absolutely. Who wants to go and capitulate, right? Who wants to hear it from Putin? Who wants to sit across the table from Putin and Lavrov and get the real story of what's going on and Putin to pass across the table the terms? Who wants to be that person? They don't want to be that person. They prefer to live in fantasy land. But isn't it interesting how Le Goblin Vert and how the collective West media, they're continuously talking about how the tide has turned and now Ukraine is winning and Russia is losing. If Russia was losing, then why is the EU scrambling to find someone to talk to Putin, right? Wouldn't it be the other way around? Wouldn't Russia be trying to figure out who do we send to speak with the Europeans, right? But it's Europe scrambling to try and figure out who do we send to speak to Russia. So the whole Russia is losing narrative is obviously false, fictitious. The winners do not try to find a negotiator that's acceptable for the losers. It just doesn't make any sense. Anyway, all right, enough of that. Let's talk about Trump and backing off from the clock is ticking strikes against Iran. Check out this title from the New York Times. Trump threatens Iran, then pulls back all in the same day. President Trump has repeatedly said he'll restart military action against Iran, only to stop short of plunging the United States directly back into an unpopular war. Yeah, all in the same day. He said he's going to attack Iran. They're ready to attack Iran. The military has given the targets. He's spoken with Netanyahu. Everything is ready to go. It could happen in 24 to 48 hours. And then a few hours later, after all these reports came out, Trump posts on Truth Social that he is calling off the imminent attack against Iran because, according to Trump, the UAE, Saudi Arabia, some other countries in the region, they told Trump not to do it. That's the excuse that he's running with. Countries in the region, the Gulf countries, told Trump, don't attack Iran because we're very close to a deal. Trump posted on Truth Social, I have been asked by the Emir of Qatar, by Saudi Arabia, by the UAE, blah, 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 to hold off on our planned military attack of the Islamic Republic of Iran, which was scheduled for tomorrow, in that serious negotiations are now taking place and that, in their opinion, the great leaders and allies, a deal will be made which will be very acceptable to the United States of America as well as to the countries of the Middle East and beyond. The deal will include, importantly, no nuclear weapons for Iran, blah, blah, blah. And just goes on to talk about why he's called off the imminent strike. He was convinced by the Gulf countries to call it off. And if you believe that, I've got a very big bridge to sell you, if you believe that one. According to the New York Times, the real reason that Trump called it off is because airstrikes against Iran carry with them all kinds of risks. Big risks. You have the Iran retaliation, and when Iran says they're going to retaliate, they're going to retaliate. And that's very risky, especially for the Gulf countries, especially for a country like the UAE, who is very worried about a big Iran retaliation should the United States launch airstrikes into Iran. Then, of course, there's the fact that you're talking about airstrikes. What would airstrikes really accomplish? You had so many airstrikes in the beginning of the conflict. It did not achieve regime change. So what is the purpose of the airstrikes? And then you have the New York Times revealing that the generals, the Pentagon officials, they told Trump that Iran is getting very good at shooting down American planes. Trump held off on additional strikes, partly because Pentagon officials warned Iran was adapting to the air campaign. Officials cited the downing of the F-15E and damage to the F-35 as signs the risk to U.S. aircraft was rising. Yeah, I would not be surprised if Russia and China are helping Iran adapt to U.S. fighter jets. And this is giving the U.S. military pause. They're very concerned about more airstrikes because the risk of seeing U.S. fighter jets knocked down would not be a good look for the United States and for U.S. President Trump. So that's the real reason why this whole thing was called off. And of course, what you have going on is you could have the market manipulation as well. I always have to say that. I always have to throw that in there. Sometimes I forget. You could be looking at market manipulation. Let's see what trades were made over the weekend. Let's see who made money in the oil price going up, in the oil price going down, in stocks going up, in stocks going down. But what you have right now is a waiting game. Who can outwait the other? The United States believes that if they can continue this game of chicken for 3 to 4 months, then the Iranian economy will collapse. And of course, for Iran, if they can hold on, then the global economy will collapse. The U.S. economy will be severely hit by the blockades and what is happening in Hormuz. So who can outlast the other? That's where we are. And every week, every couple of days, Trump has to has to say he's going to attack. He has to say he's going to get the uranium. He's going to collect the dust with the vacuum, with a dust buster. He wants the dust. And then he has to talk about an imminent attack. And then he has to walk it back. And we have this routine that Trump is putting out there, that Trump is performing every week. And he's just buying time. He's buying another week and another week. And eventually we're going to get to say, the three-month mark. And then we'll see. Is the Iranian economy still up and running? I believe it will be still up and running. If that's the case, then the United States has got big problems. So let's turn our attention to the beautiful statue. I love this statue. Beautiful area. Beautiful area in Belgrade. So let's talk about 008, 007, Donald J. Trump. 008, Keir Starmer. And the UK establishment, the political class, is using the Starmer debacle to make the Starmer succession, what am I saying, to turn this into a referendum on Brexit. And not even a referendum. It's not a referendum. To just reverse Brexit by taking the vote away from the British people and making it into a party decision. What a clever little trick that the establishment is playing, huh? Don't let a good crisis go to waste. So you have the crisis with Starmer. And what do? If you're the UK political class, you take the Starmer thing and make it all about Brexit and reversing Brexit and going back into the EU. That's what you turn this into. And that is exactly what they are doing. According to Politico, Brexit is already dominating the battle to replace Keir Starmer. Keir Starmer looks headed for a bitter Labour leadership contest. And like it or not, Britain's relationship with the EU will be on the ballot. Britain's relationship with the EU will be on the ballot. What ballot? Labour's ballot. Who's going to replace Starmer? Is it going to be Wes Streeting, who wants to return back to Britain, back to the EU? Or is it going to be Andy Burnham, who wants to return Britain back to the EU? He has to be a little more careful because he has the by-election, so he can't be too outspoken like Wes Streeting. And Wes Streeting just comes out and says it, Britain back to the European Union. But Burnham has to be a little more careful, at least until the by-election. But yeah, that's it. That's what's on the ballot. The two people that will succeed Starmer are making this into a return to the European Union, effectively trying to remove the people's vote, to cancel out the people's vote. It's not so much about Starmer anymore, it's about Brexit. You see the clever game that they are playing? They're not fooling anybody. They are not fooling anyone. But anyway, that's what they're trying to do here. Starmer goes, someone else comes in, back into the EU. That's how they're trying to play this. So Politico is also pushing an attack on Cuba. They put out an article with the title, "Yes, Trump Might Really Attack Cuba." The shift comes as administration officials struggle to convince the Cuban regime to make major economic and political changes. Yeah, they're struggling to convince the Cuban regime to make political changes. They're trying to talk to the Cuban regime. You know, they're trying to talk and reason with the Cuban regime about political changes, but no luck. The poor Trump administration, the poor CIA, they're trying to work things out with Cuba. Now they're going to just have to attack Cuba. Oh boy. So that's Politico pushing the attack on Cuba narrative, manufacturing consent for some sort of a Cuba invasion or intervention. I think I saw a video on X of Cuba getting into the Lego game, the Lego information war. They put out a Lego video blasting the Trump administration. some Cuba design team. Pretty good song, pretty good video for their first attempt. But yeah, Lego propaganda, very hot. So, very effective as well. Got a Burger Fest going on. This is where I'm coming later on, to the Burger Fest.
Hello.
To the Burger Fest. Okay, there's some music, so I will not enter because of the music. Let's walk. Let's walk further and we'll do our clown worlds for the day. And we got some good ones, some very good clown worlds, or one good clown world. And we have a clown world update from yesterday. So clown world number one, we got to talk about Lithuania. Lithuania, the one Baltic state that has been relatively quiet when it comes to the smack being talked about Russia, about escalating with Russia. Lithuania has been kind of low key, right? Estonia has been talking a lot of smack. I did a video on the Estonian foreign minister demanding that no negotiations take place with Russia. Of course, we have Latvia. Latvia absolutely escalating big time. The Latvian government actually collapsing because of the drone chaos. But Lithuania, kind of quiet. Kind of quiet. Well, quiet no more. Quiet no more. Lithuania. We have the foreign minister of Lithuania. So Lithuania has been kind of quiet, and the foreign minister tells Estonia and Latvia, hold my beer. Here is what he came out with. He said in an interview with a Swiss publication, Neuszürcher Zeitung, he actually called on NATO to attack Kaliningrad to demonstrate NATO's power. Must demonstrate the power of NATO. Let's cross. Let me read you the quote from the foreign minister of Lithuania. It's a wild one. It is a crazy quote. Talk about delusional. Here we go. We need to show the Russians that we can break through the small fortress they have built in Kaliningrad. NATO has the means to level Russian air defense and missile systems in, if necessary. That is what the foreign minister of Lithuania said in this interview. To attack Kaliningrad. Okay, okay, bro. Good luck with that one. Belarus and Russia, they have nuclear drills going on today from the 19th, I think, till the 21st. And they're preparing for a NATO attack. That's the purpose of these nuclear drills, is to prepare for a NATO attack. And these are big drills. So, yeah. I don't think that attack will work out so well for NATO on Kaliningrad. Let me lower the audio. One sec. All right. Had to find a quieter street. From the music, away from the music, and on towards the umbrellas. So that's the foreign minister of NATO, whose name is, what's the dude's name? Budris. That's the guy's name, Mr. Budris. Let me turn down the audio. Okay, audio back on. Sorry about that, but have to do it. So that's clown world number one. Mr. Budris talking about attacking Kaliningrad, Russia, Belarus, holding joint nuclear drills, sending a very clear message to NATO. Don't you even think about it, and if you do, well, things will not be good for you guys if you decide to go after Kaliningrad. They're thinking about it, though, you know? They are thinking about it. Let's walk this way. And we can do Clown World number 2, which is a kind of Clown World update. And I go back to the alien post from Trump yesterday. And I did not see in that image, that AI image of Trump walking with the alien, that the alien was in handcuffs. The AI alien image that Trump posted featured a shackled alien. I did not see that. Did you guys see that the alien was in handcuffs? That's weird. That is weird. Why would an alien be in handcuffs? I don't get it. What did the alien do? Did he rob a bank or something? Why would you have him or her, right? Why would you have it in handcuffs? It doesn't make any sense. And are you telling me that this alien that made it to Earth is not strong enough to break our metals, our handcuffs? Come on. Are you telling me that the alien is a weakling? It can't break the handcuffs? What a weak alien. What kind of technology do these guys have? What kind of strength do these guys have? Take me to your leader. I am your leader, and I like it. Anyway, weird. Very, very weird. So I will end the video there. TheDuran.locals.com. We're on X. We're on Rumble, and we are on Telegram. Go to the Duran shop, pick up some merch. We got a special on t-shirts. So definitely check out the Duran shop. If you're in Europe, definitely check out Belgrade, Serbia. Look at the detail. That's some serious detail from the city. Very nice. Very, very nice. Attention to detail. Very important. I will see everybody tomorrow. Take care.